Man kann sein Glück aussehen, es hegen und pflegen, langsam wachsen sehen, darauf warten.
Oder man reißt es einfach auf.
Die Lose zum Aufreißen von Lotto Bayern. Das Bayernlos, das Bayernglück, das Extragehalt oder das Megagehalt. Reiß dein Glück auf. Nur in deiner Lottoannahmestelle. Lotto Bayern, nimm dein Glück in die Hand.
Spielteilnahme ab 18. Glücksspiel kann süchtig machen. Infos unter bjork.de.
I'm a cave rescue diver. Most people hear that and picture some Discovery Channel documentary, dramatic music, divers swimming gracefully through crystal clear water. That's not what it's like. Not even close. What it's really like is crawling through a stone throat that's barely wide enough for your body, hundreds of feet underground, with water pressing in on you from every angle. The ceiling scrapes the tank strapped to your back. The rock squeezes your shoulders until they bruise, and if your light dies, you can't even see your own hands in front of your face. Just black, thick and total, the kind of dark that makes you feel like you've already been buried. We go in because people get stuck down there. Amateurs, weekend thrill seekers, sometimes tourists who thought a guided tour meant they could just keep going once the rope ends. If they're lucky, they panic and turn back early. If they're unlucky, I get called in. I've had grown men claw at my mask in blind terror, ripping out their own regulators because they swore they were drowning even while they still had air. I've had to haul limp bodies out by the harness, lips blue, lungs full, their faces so swollen with water, it's like they were trying to scream the whole time. I've even found one bloated and wedged in a rock fissure, so tight, it took 2 hours just to free him, skin peeling under my gloves as I pulled. That's the job. That's the reality. You breathe slowly, you move slowly, and you pray that nothing goes wrong. Because in those passages, even the smallest mistake can kill you. But all of that, the panic, the corpses, the claustrophobia, feels like child's play compared to what happened last night. The call came just after midnight. A group of amateurs had gone missing in a limestone system about 30 miles out of town, a place locals already whispered about, because people had a habit of vanishing there. Some caves swallow you with depth. This one, they said, moved you around. When we pulled up, the rangers were waiting. They looked like they had already given up hope, having seen too many unrecoverable missions in the area. One of them, an older guy with a face like dried leather, told me the cave was breathing. I laughed at first, thinking he meant air vents or the usual weird acoustics you get underground. But then he explained it. Currents that shifted back and forth like tides, sucking you in, then pushing you out. No river fed it, no sea connected to it. The cave itself exhaled. I'd never been to this particular system, but it was good to know about the strange flow. We're used to dealing with anomalies, whether it was due to human failure or natural phenomenon, but the thing that made me pause was the distress call. They'd managed to patch it through to us. Static, heavy, muffled by stone and water, but unmistakably human. Three static voices crying, gasping, begging. Then a fourth, sharper, almost frantic. I'll never forget the words. "Don't bring it back out with you." At the time, we thought they were delirious. Now, I'm not so sure. Our crew was smaller that night. That's how it usually is. Less people, less risk. My team lead, Commander Harris, had been in the game longer than I'd been alive. He was a former military diver with a thick neck and a square jaw. All bark, but not as much bite unless you really screwed up. He had the kind of calm that annoyed you because it made you realize how rattled you were by comparison. Then there was Leon. He was a good diver with plenty of hours logged, but this was one of his first real rescues, and that's a whole different world. Recreational dives don't prepare you for dragging bodies out of cracks or sharing air with someone clawing your mask off in a blind panic. Leon kept fiddling with his weight belt and asking for his tank to be adjusted higher or lower every few minutes. He wouldn't admit it, but I could see the nerves eating at him. For communication, we used full face masks fitted with radios, something Leon was still adjusting to after years diving with a standard regulator. Each of us also carried a spare mask and an octopus setup in case we found survivors, or had to share air with someone trying to claw their way back to the surface. A couple medics were on standby up top. They hovered near the gear crates, whispering to each other and throwing us uneasy looks, like they were hoping to never actually have to work tonight. We gathered around Harris while he ran through the plan. The entrance was tight, barely enough space for one diver at a time. About 40 meters in, it opened into a submerged tunnel that twisted like a corkscrew before spilling into a chamber the locals had nicknamed the Maze. That's where the missing group had last been heard. "Stay in the line, stay in your buddy, and keep an eye on your oxygen and depth," Harris said, voice clipped like he'd given this speech 100 times. "If visibility drops, stop and wait. Don't wander blind. If you lose the guideline, call it, and we'll regroup." Leon nodded, like he was trying to drill it into his brain. We lowered ourselves into the water. 1 second, the world is wide open. Sky, trees, voices from the surface. And the next, it shrinks to a tunnel of stone during controlled descent. The limestone swallowed me fast. My light barely cut 10 feet in front of me, just enough to paint jagged rock walls and the swirling cloud of silt stirred up by my fins. The ceiling pressed low, close enough that my helmet scraped once, twice, the sound grating in my ears. My tank banged against the rock when I turned too sharply. Every clang was a reminder that there wasn't a centimeter of space to waste. I slowed my breathing, long, careful intakes. "If you let your pulse spike down here, you'll empty your tank in half the time." I counted the bubbles as they rose, each silver sphere flashing against my light before vanishing into the dark above. The guideline stretched ahead, taut and reassuring under my gloved fingers. Leon was behind me, Harris bringing up the rear. We moved like a chain, slow, steady, deliberate. The entrance funneled down until there was barely enough space for me to slide through. A slit of rock, sharp and unwelcoming, just wide enough for my shoulders if I turned sideways. I pushed in and immediately felt the cave close around me. Stone pressed on both sides of my chest, the ceiling scraping the tank so hard it rang in my ears. My knees dragged, my belly ground against the floor. There was no room for my arms to move, just one hand forward, then the other, pulling myself along the guideline. Halfway through, my fin caught. A sharp tug stopped me cold. I tried to kick gently, but it only wedged deeper. For a moment, I was pinned. My whole body jerked and the tank banged against the ceiling. That's when the panic tried to rise. The thought hit hard and fast. If I get stuck here, I'll die here. No room to turn, no space to back out. Just stone pressing from every direction and a tank slowly running dry. I forced myself to exhale, slow, controlled. My chest shrank just enough to wriggle forward, scraping raw skin against the limestone. My movement caused the silt out. My light vanished in a choking brown cloud, and the squeeze turned into a blind coffin. No up or down, just black water and rock crushing in. my heartbeat filled the mask. And in that dark, with my body locked tight, something touched me. A smooth drag across my shoulders. It wasn't rock. Something moved. For a second, I thought Leon had caught up, reaching out to steady himself. But Leon was 30 feet behind me. Harris was farther still. No one else could have been there. The squeeze spat me out into a chamber big enough that I could finally stretch my arms without scraping bone. My light cut across black water and pale stone, the air above just out of reach, trapped in small pockets that clung to the ceiling. For a moment, I let myself breathe deeper, grateful for the space. My shoulders ached from grinding through the tunnel, and my mask hissed like it was mocking the relief. I swept my beam across the chamber, tracing the walls. That's when I saw them. Gouges. Long, curved lines carved deep into the limestone. I thought they were natural striations, erosion maybe, but the edges were too smooth. They looked fresh, marks you'd expect from metal dragged hard against stone. "Harris, Leon, I've got marks down here," I said into the comms, my voice tinny in my own ears. Static swallowed the channel for a moment before Harris's voice came back, calm as ever. "Copy that. Could be old. Keep moving. Stay sharp." I wanted to believe him, but the gouges looked too clean. I tried to reason it out. Maybe old dive gear had scraped against the walls, a careless fin, a tank valve banging around. But we were too far in. Recreational divers never made it this deep. You don't get gouges like that in a place only rescue teams ever reach. I drifted closer, my fingers brushing the nearest mark. It was wide enough to fit my thumb inside, the stone cool and strangely polished at the edges. Then I heard something. Knock. The sound was sharp, deliberate, like stone on stone. It echoed across the chamber in a hollow rhythm. Knock, knock, knock. I froze. My light cut circles through the water, searching for Harris or Leon. The line was still taut in my hand, no sign of movement behind me. The knocking came again, slow, even. It took me a moment to realize the sound wasn't coming from the walls at all. It was coming from beneath me. I followed the line deeper into the chamber, the beam of my light cutting narrow cones into the dark. The water was cold here, still and heavy, like the cave itself was holding its breath. Then, I saw him, the first of the missing group. He was jammed half into a fissure in the wall, body twisted unnaturally, helmet angled sideways as though he tried to force himself into a gap too small to escape through. I drifted closer, careful not to stir the silt, and the details hit me all at once. His mask was flooded, his eyes stared white and swollen, lips peeled back over his teeth, but it was his suit that froze me. Deep scratches tore across the neoprene. Dozens, long, raking grooves that cut all the way through the fabric underneath. His helmet, too, was scoured with the same marks, carved across the visor in jagged arcs. I've seen panicked divers claw themselves bloody trying to escape. I've even seen the desperate scrape off fingernails on stone where someone tried to wedge themselves free. But these weren't frantic scratchings. They were too deep, like he'd been seized and dragged backward into the dark. I swallowed hard and forced myself to work. You don't think down here. You just act. "Command, I've got one body," I said into the comms, voice flat. Static rasped back. Then Harris's voice cut through, low and measured. "Copy. Secure him if you can. otherwise mark and move, survivors first. I pulled the body bag from my pack and slid it open, fingers numb inside my gloves as I maneuvered him out of the fissure. He was limp, heavy, one arm floating grotesquely behind him like he was waving. That's when I felt it. A sudden, sharp tug at my fin, hard enough to yank me half around. My light swung wildly across the chamber, hoping it was Leon, not in control of his strength because of his nerves, but catching only stone and black water. No one was there, just silt stirred up from movement. I left the body for the rear to handle. Being lead, I was the one who had to push forward and scout ahead. The chamber funneled upward into a narrow shaft, and I followed the guideline until my light caught the silver shimmer of air above. I rose carefully, breaking the surface with a hollow splash. The space was barely big enough to fit me. A bubble chamber, no more than 4 feet across, jagged limestone pressing in from all sides. The air was foul, sharp with minerals, sour with a stench of rot and stagnant water. My headlamp haloed the low ceiling in a dull circle, illuminating beads of condensation that trembled with every ripple I made. I hit the purge valve on my mask and let the stream of bubbles spill into the chamber. The sound echoed in the cramped pocket like a sigh. My lungs burned from the squeeze. I let the stale air fill them again, slow and deliberate, before biting the mouthpiece back in. That's when I heard it. Breathing. Not mine, not the steady hiss of my tank, but the ragged drawer of lungs straining for air. Soft, wet, coming from the dark corner of the bubble where my light couldn't quite reach. Hello? My voice was muffled through the mask. I lifted the lamp higher, beam trembling against the rock. For a moment, I swore I saw it. A thin bloom of fog on the stone wall, like someone else had exhaled just ahead of me. A human breath frosting the rock in the stale chamber air. I shifted, heart hammering. Survivors sometimes wedge themselves into pockets like this. I'd seen it before, clinging to the last gasp of oxygen, half dead but alive enough to save. I leaned closer, straining to hear, hoping it was just another lost explorer. But the breathing didn't answer me. It only grew fainter, moving away. I followed the line down from the bubble chamber. The passage widened again, and this time my light struck something huddled against the rock. Movement. I kicked closer, breath catching when I saw the pale skin, the mask pulled halfway off, hair drifting like weeds in the current. Not another body this time. A man. Alive. He was wedged onto a little ledge just beneath a larger air pocket, his head bobbing weakly in and out of the surface. His lips were blue, his face chalk white. He trembled so violently, I thought he might shake himself off the ledge. But his eyes were open, wild, staring right at me. Relief hit me so hard it almost buckled my knees. This was it. This was the breath I'd heard, the fog on the rock. I'd found him. He was the reason I'd come down here. I lifted my lamp higher, signaling, trying to coax him forward. He flinched away from the light, pressing back against the stone. His teeth chattered so hard they made a dull clicking sound against his mask. I surfaced beside him, mask off. "You're right," I said, trying to sound calm. "I've got you. We're getting you out." He shook his head furiously, eyes rolling. His lips moved, at first too soft for me to hear over the dripping. Then I caught his words. "It followed us in." His voice was a rasp, broken and wet. It doesn't let go. Don't take me back out. A shiver ran through me. Half hypothermic, I told myself. Delirious. That's what happens when you're starved of warmth and oxygen. The brain eats itself. You can't take their words at face value. But the way he stared at the black water below us, the way his hands scrambled against the rock, as if bracing against the current only he could feel. It was too much like the scratches I'd seen on the body, too much like the shape I'd glimpsed slipping into the dark. I could tell myself he was raving, but I couldn't leave him there to die. I pulled the octopus and spare mask and handed it to him. His hands trembled so badly, I had to adjust the straps myself, tightening them against his skull. His eyes darted everywhere, never meeting mine, fixed always on the water behind me. "Breathe steady," I said. "We're going back. Follow me." The moment I eased him into the water, he tried to twist away, kicking weakly toward the ledge, as if he'd rather starve in that pocket than leave it. I had to grab his harness and yank him along the guideline, forcing him forward. He thrashed once, twice, then his limbs faltered, too weak. His movements turned sluggish, exhausted, and at last he floated behind me, tethered to my grip like a dead weight. I kept us moving, hand over hand on the line, one slow kick at a time. My breathing sounded too loud in the mask, every hiss and exhale bouncing in my skull. The survivor's regulator rattled in his teeth. I wanted to believe we were alone, that I'd gotten him out of the worst of it. Then, something hit me. Not hard, but a long, smooth brush across my side, glancing my tank and sliding along the survivor tethered to me. It felt rubbery, like the drag of a thick rope pulled across flesh. I whipped my light around, beam cutting through the murk. "Leon?" My voice cracked across the comms. "Harris, you back here?" No answer, no flash of a lamp, just the black water behind me, empty except the faint shimmer of the line. I held the survivor tighter, pulling him close. He was shaking so violently, it felt like he might tear himself free. His eyes were wide, whites glaring in the dark mask, bubbles erupting from his mouthpiece in sharp bursts. There was no current. That was something alive. We moved slowly, following the guideline, our only salvation. Then the water around us erupted. A surge of silt poured upward, as if something had raked its hand through the floor of the chamber. My beam vanished in a storm of brown and black, visibility collapsing to nothing. The survivor thrashed instantly, wrenching his head side to side. One trembling hand shot up to his mask, nails raking against the glass as he clawed to pull it off. I grabbed his wrist and pinned it down, shaking my head hard, forcing my lamp into his face so he could see me. His pupils were blown wide, white foam bubbling at the corners of his mouthpiece. I dragged him forward, dragging myself forward, each motion blind. My hand clung to the guideline as if it were the last solid thing in the world. And then, light caught motion. For just a second, my beam sliced through the silt and revealed something sliding across the rock. Slick, pale, the shape of a limb bending wrong, gone again before my mind could give it a name. I swung my light the other way, another glimpse farther off, something gliding fast, skimming the wall just out of reach, too big to be a fish, too fast to be a diver. My chest seized, my brain wanted to call it a trick of the silt, a hallucination born of panic. But the survivor's muffled scream vibrated through the water, and I knew he'd seen it too. It wasn't just following us, it was circling us. We pushed forward, hand over hand along the guideline. The survivor sagged heavy in my grip. He wasn't helping anymore, just dead weight dragged behind me, shuddering with every breath. That's when my beam caught the white shimmer of another mask ahead. Relief surged through me so sharp it hurt. Leon. He must have come in after me, ready to haul the first body back while Harris stayed at the entrance. His silhouette hovered by the line, one hand braced against the rock as if waiting. Leon, my voice cracked across the comms, raw with adrenaline. I've got one alive. No answer, just static. I pulled closer, heart pounding, until my light fell full on his face. And the relief snapped like brittle glass. Leon floated there in the line of my beam, mask half flooded, eyes clouded, mouthpiece slipping from his lips. His suit was raked with the same gouges I'd seen on the first body, long, tearing scratches that cut deep across his chest and arms. He looked fresher, not yet swollen, like it had only just happened. It was reminiscent of the state I found the first survivor, only more raw. The survivor saw him too. The moment his gaze landed on Leon's body, he bucked hard against me, thrashing so violently the spare mask nearly tore free. I clamped down with one hand, cursing into my comms. And then, knock. The sound rolled through the chamber, sharp and hollow, beating against the stone. Knock, knock, knock. Each one in perfect rhythm with my pulse. The survivor lost it. He clawed at me, his scream bubbling from the mask in a high-pitched whine that stabbed through the water. His panic was like blood in the water. It drew attention. The darkness moved. Something slick and pale surged past, fast enough that the water shifted around us. The survivor jerked suddenly, yanked half out of my grip, bubbles exploding from his mouthpiece as his body snapped taut in the current of something pulling. I lunged, grabbing his harness, fingers slipping on the wet nylon. My lamp cut wild arcs through the silt, catching only fragments. A curve of flesh, an arm-like shape bending wrong, long fingers brushing stone as it circled back. The knocks kept coming, louder, closer, hammering in my chest, until I couldn't tell if it was the cave or my own heart about to burst. We had to move. I kept one hand locked on the guideline and the other gripping the survivor's harness. He fought me at first, kicking, thrashing, just enough to stir the water into choking clouds of silt. My light cut through nothing but mud-brown haze, every beam swallowed whole. We moved blind. One hand, one rope. A thin nylon line was all that tethered us to the world outside the cave. I forced myself not to think about what would happen if I lost it. The survivor clawed at me again, half pulling free. His eyes were wide, pupils brown, every muscle in his body trembling. Then, slowly, the fight left him. His limbs sagged, his kicks softened. By the time I felt the current shift around us, guiding us toward the wider entrance shaft, he was limp in my grip, dead weight trailing in the gloom. Relief punched through me when my headlamp finally caught the shimmer of daylight filtering down. We were almost out, almost safe. I hauled him along, lungs screaming for open air. The line pulled taut toward the exit, my fingers clung to it like a lifeline. Then, I glanced back. The silt was still thick behind us, but it wasn't brown anymore. It was red. A cloud of blood hung in the air, thick and roiling, and at the center of it, the survivor's body dangled slack in my grip. His chest and arms were shredded, carved into ribbons, limbs missing chunks or gone entirely, like he'd been dragged through a man-sized blender. For a second, shock froze me. I'd been so focused on getting out, I hadn't even felt him go. The red cloud shifted suddenly, rolling outward as if stirred by something huge. A slick, pale mass twisted inside the crimson haze, too fast to catch more than a glimpse. It wheeled sharply, then shot back into the cave with a force that made the water around me heave, skimming the edge of the daylight, slipping back into the cold darkness of the cave. Gone. All I had left was the survivor's ruined body in my hands and the blood cloud blooming like a warning. My instincts screamed to kick hard, to bolt for the surface. But I couldn't. Fast ascents kill divers as surely as anything in that cave. Lungs overexpand, blood foams, the bends hit you before you even break daylight. So I force myself to slow down, eyes focused upward. Looking back would only be a reminder. My hands clamped around the survivor's shredded harness. I began the climb, inch by inch, breath by breath. The dead weight dragged behind me, body torn to ribbons, limp as a doll. His head lolled, bubbles dribbling from the regulator as if he was still breathing. My light caught flashes of him with every kick. Shredded neoprene, pale skin through the rips, blood still feathering into the water like smoke. Every pause felt like a punishment. I counted the seconds, listening to the pounding in my ears, and stared into the black below, half expecting another pale limb to surge out of it. Only when the depth gauge finally crept into the green did I allow myself to ascend the last stretch. The lights of command glimmered above, blurry through the water, close enough to touch. I hauled the ruined body with me, lungs aching, and prayed nothing followed us the rest of the way. I broke the surface, screaming into the comms. Not calm procedure, just everything at once. Leon was gone, the survivor was torn apart, another was already dead. Something in the cave was moving. By the time command dragged me onto the bank, I was still spitting water, slipping blood from my dive suit. Medics tried to haul the survivor's remains away, but there wasn't much left to take. The higher-ups didn't believe the details. Not the hand I saw in the dark, not the knocks that taunted me, or the pale shapes circling us in the silt. But they didn't have to. The blood cloud and the bodies told their own story. That cave was a death trap. By morning, the order came down to seal the entrance. Every connected shaft in that limestone system was marked for closure. Too dangerous, they said. Too unstable. I didn't argue. The part I can't explain, the part no one talks about, is Harris. He followed me in after Leon, but never came back out. No body or signal. Just gone, swallowed whole. Officially, they've got him listed as MIA. Unofficially, I know better. I still work in Cave Rescue. It's all I know. But things changed after that night. In the future, if I see deep gouges carved into the walls, if I hear currents shift without reason, and knocking I can't explain, I won't push forward. I won't call for backup. I'll call it in as a lost cause and pray in the dark that the ones inside can find their own way out.